Welcome to T-Back's Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Petco Park in San Diego, California, this is D-backs podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. And welcome to episode 24. As we continue our comeback from a two-month hiatus in midsummer, our second episode in September, and our final D-backs podcast from the road this year, as we are set to begin the last road series of the 2015 season here at Petco Park, the end of yet another long 10-game, three-city road trip, the last road trip of the year, guys. And it seems as if most of the longer trips, the 9, 10-gamer, three-city trips, have been crammed into the last 2 months of the year. It's been a kind of a slog here the last couple of months.
I like the fact that they played well on the road all year, and I think that made the road travel a little bit more tolerable.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they played better on the road than they have at home.
Seems so, like we've been gone a lot.
Yeah.
It feels that way. But you know what? Every year.
We have been gone a lot.
It all equals out, and every year there's stretches that just seem like it drags a little bit, and some trips are harder than others.
It has, it's certainly been a great deal of traveling and airplanes and hotels for the Diamondbacks in August and September. But after this weekend, as we record this on Friday the 25th, one more homestand, three against the Rockies, three against the Astros, and then the 2015 season's done. So this is it.
Done.
You get a little sad?
Out of here.
I am a little sad. I'm tired. I'll be glad to put my feet up for a week or so, but after that I'll be bored again.
I'm excited for next year. What's transpired this year, the progress they have made, and looking and going to the offseason, making a few more changes and getting this ball club even better.
We will talk about that and other things. I'm Steve Berthew, and we have got what I think may be one of the best shows we've ever done.
Huge.
On D-backs podcast. No kidding. This is episode 24. It's a biggie. The road trip took us through San Francisco, Los Angeles, and now here in San Diego. We have recorded interviews in two of those spots. Patrick Corbin will join us in just a few minutes following his start yesterday at Dodger Stadium against Clayton Kershaw. We will talk to Patrick about his comeback from Tommy John surgery, where he is, how he feels, where he is headed after what has been a very successful comeback and has everybody so optimistic about Patrick in 2016.
And he's fun to listen to. I mean, he's a kid who cares, and he's an ace-type pitcher. So yeah.
Yeah, you talk about makeup. Like he is, such a competitor, and he handles himself and carries himself as a professional. He's a great kid. He's enthusiastic, and
his demeanor is probably my favorite thing about him.
Yeah, I agree. He just does it the way that you want it done, and it's just nice to see. Also, we have an interview we recorded at Dodger Stadium a couple of days ago earlier this week, which I think is fair to say may be the best interview we have ever done on D-backs podcast.
Well, thank you. Oh, Vin Scully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We sat down for 15 minutes with the Hall of Famer Vin Scully for a very compelling discussion about the Dodgers, his great career, and you will hear Vin tell us exclusively exactly why next season will be his final season broadcasting Dodgers games. And this one is a special interview. It was a treat for us, I know, and we believe the audience
as
well.
You guys did a great job with it.
We were going to go about 5. We ended up talking about 15. He didn't want to leave, so that's what made it fun.
Could have gone a day and a half.
Oh, it was tremendous.
You don't have enough tape or what do you use these days?
It's all electronic stuff.
You didn't have enough computer.
We just
space.
Hope that Leo's got everything plugged in.
You did tape it, right?
Yeah, that was the thing. As soon as we finished the interview with Vin, both said to Leo, now you're going to be able to keep this, right?
If not, take our word for it. It was a great interview.
So that's coming up on this program. Time to introduce our cavalcade of stars on D-backs podcast. We just came from L.A., where they held the Emmy Awards the night before we began our four-game series with the Dodgers.
Was it a big night for Game of Thrones? I'm taking it.
It always is. One of the biggest winners, however, Gubb, at this year's Emmys was the HBO comedy hit Veep.
Veep.
Which is one of my favorite shows.
Good show.
Starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus of Seinfeld fame. She is a woman vice president turned president now. The show is hilarious. She won her fourth consecutive Emmy for comedy actress in a lead role. The show itself, Veep, won Best Comedy Series, ending a long streak of wins by another great show, Modern Family. That's also a tremendous show. And the actor Tony Hale won an Emmy in a supporting role on Veep. He plays Gary. Leo, you're familiar with Veep. Gary, the bag man.
He's outstanding.
And he's hilarious. He won an Emmy.
And he was there.
And he was there. He's kind of the boy Friday for Julie Louis-Dreyfus's character, Selena Meyer.
But he was there in L.A.
And Tony Hale, two nights after he won the Emmy, Leo, once again, no relation to Chip. Leo, once again, you're right on this.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Hale threw out the first pitch when we were there at Dodger Stadium before the game against the Diamondbacks and sat behind the D-backs dugout in a Dodgers jersey with Hale on the back of it. And Chip saw this and literally just grabbed one of his jerseys from the clubhouse and said, here, if you're going to wear Hale on the back of your shirt,
absolutely,
make sure it's a Diamondback shirt. So Tony Hale, 2 days after he got the Emmy, has got the D-backs Hale jersey from the manager. So
you think they're
Hale.
You think they're displayed next to each other?
On Twitter, I put out a picture of it that Gar Reines, the batting stance guy who was sitting with Tony Hale, sent to me, and we put that out on the Twitter. So if you want to go back through the archives, it's there. Anyway, the point of this is...
Where were we? Yeah.
We introduce our leading candidate, our president, our vice president, the D-backs man in the... Well, he's in the Oval Office of D-backs Broadcasting, the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham. He's the governor, Greg Schulte.
Thank you very much.
That's your Elvis.
You knew that, so I guess it was.
A whole lot of titles there.
Well, he's earned them.
President, Vice President, Governor.
Lord Commander. Earl of Grantham. Whew. I can't wait for Downton Abbey to start again, by the way. That's a
wait
whole other
show. Wait
till
you see my stationery next year.
we're getting the chair made right now.
Also on the program.
Yes?
Which Veep character best personifies Leo Gilmartin?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
It could be. She's a little bit of a mess, you know, scatterbrained, walking into walls a lot. I really didn't think that's fair.
I think that's more Candy that does that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That is Candy. I don't think it's Gary the bumbling bag man, the role for which Tony Hale just won the Emmy. I'll leave that up to Leo. Let's just call him the Kingslayer. He is the mother of dragons, Leo, Bad News Gilmartin, also on the program.
As long as I'm Bad News, I'm good.
You keep getting that reference to Marvin Barnes. I like that.
Yeah.
I think you should put that on your stationery.
Yeah.
Bad news?
As long as I'm bad news, I'm good.
Sincerely, from the desk of bad news or bad news from the desk of?
It's usually both, isn't it? What a week it's been, Gub. I got to say, we're on this road trip here. We got three more in San Diego. Last road trip of the season. Last road series of the season, too. And pretty good. Won 2 of 3 in San Francisco. Won the first two in Dodger Stadium, the first two wins in that ballpark all year.
They could have won all four.
Could have won all four easily. The last two losses, certainly disappointing, got away from them late. But all in all, it's been a very strong road trip through the division against the best teams in the division to end the year.
And the Diamondbacks still have the most wins and the best record on the road in the National League West this season.
That's big. That tells you a lot about where they're headed next year.
The Dodgers 35-39. Giants are 8 below .500. This Padre ball club 10 below .500. And Colorado 15 below .500 on the road. Now, where they have to improve, obviously, is at home. But as far as the road, yeah, it's been a good road trip. Anytime you win any kind of a game in Los Angeles, the way they played the Diamondbacks in the past, that's a plus. And it'd be nice to get a series win here in San Diego and then home for the final six with the Rockies and that Houston series, which is really shaping up to be big now.
That's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere. Yeah. The Astros, those are going to be critical do-or-die games. It will either win or lose their season for them. It certainly looks like now. So that's coming up at the end of the year. But, you know, it's interesting. We've seen a couple of times, and this was the thing I thought of in watching Robbie Ray pitch at Dodger Stadium Tuesday, is that we've seen a couple of times over the course of the year where the Diamondbacks go through one turn of the rotation, and every guy is better than the guy who started the night before. And I think we just saw that on the last turn through. Robbie Ray, who's really struggled at times this year, was sensational and looked like a different guy out there on the mound. Bob on TV kept using the word conviction. He looked like he had complete conviction in his pitches. His body language, his persona, I thought, took a major turn and a major upswing there.
Well, and I agree. And here are – I'm going to give you two guys, and I'm going to compare home and road. Mm-hmm. Robbie Ray on the road this year in 12 starts, 4-6. Mind you, he's only won five, right?
Correct.
4-6, 2.49 ERA. At home – Robbie Ray, 1-6 and 9 starts with a 5.20. Ruby De La Rosa, who's pitching the ball game as we're taping this here tonight, at home 4.99, but he's got a 7-3 record in 14 starts, while on the road a 4.27 ERA and a 6-5 record. So he's about even there, but he's pitched much better on the road of late. I guess what I'm saying is, I hope it's not a Chase Field thing where, you know, they get a little nervous about pitching in our ballpark. You have the big ballparks in the NL West. Yeah. The Los Angeles, even this ballpark, although it's playing a little bit smaller this year, San Francisco, Colorado can be large. But Robbie just seems more comfortable. All the good starts we've pretty much seen from Robbie have been on the road. I don't know if that's a curiosity factor or just a circumstance that developed this year or not.
Yeah, I tend to think it's just a coincidence myself. Because guys have been up and down at different points in the year. Robbie, throughout the first half of the year, was really, really solid. Then he sort of hit this nebulous space where he seemed to lose his identity a bit. The fastball command wasn't there. Should he be throwing more sliders and changeups? I think he sort of went through a path there where he was trying to figure out who he was out there on the mound. And certainly looked like he figured that out in his last start.
And I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if there is a thing about pitching to Chase Field, I hope these guys can get over it because that's their home ballpark. But Robbie Ray, when he pitches on the road, has been just lights out in Colorado twice. Yeah. You know, what we've seen on some of his other starts, his numbers have been really, really good. I think it is coincidence, but it's interesting. What do you want me to look at?
I wanted you to look at Jeremy Hellickson at home because Jeremy Hellickson in his start at San Francisco, they lost on the Sunday game, was tremendous, really good. And
Hellickson at home.
He's good at home. What are the numbers?
3-9-0 and 12 starts, 6-4 record.
Yeah, okay.
And on the road, Hellickson 3-6 and 13 starts and a 5-5-6.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's the type of guy with his stuff that you would think he doesn't have the power two-seamer. He's got the changeup and the curveball.
Right.
He's a guy that you think might be susceptible to having a difficult time at Chase Field because if he leaves it up, it's going to get hit. But he's been better at home than he has on the road.
He has.
I think that just underscores the point that it might be more coincidence than anything else.
Corbin, who gets a lot of ground balls, 2.41, 2-3 at home. On the road, he is 4-2, 4.19.
How do you feel about this division? Now, a million things can happen over the wintertime, but where we are here, this is our last road series in the division of the year. How do you think the other teams in the division stack up heading into next year compared to the Diamondbacks?
Well, the Dodgers are getting older.
They have a lot of problems for me.
The Padres have got to fix what they started to do this year and didn't work. The Rockies are the Rockies. And the Giants, I think, will retool. The Giants need pitching. They've hit well, even through the injuries, with some of their key people being out. I think the Diamondbacks are the best offensive club in the National League, or in the National League West. And I say that because the Rockies, when they go on the road compared to what they do at home, they're a completely different ball club.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks do at home and road. Defensively, I think the Diamondbacks are the best fielding team of the National League West. Now, where they have to catch up to the other teams, most notably the Dodgers with Kershaw and Greinke, and that's tough to do, but the Dodgers got some holes. The Diamondbacks have got to get their pitching taken care of, and I think they'll definitely do that in the offseason.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
I think they've got the biggest upside of the teams that we were talking about, Bert, and answer
that's
your question.
That's sort of where I was going. As you look ahead to the Diamondbacks, who are clearly on the upswing here, and I think the division is headed for a big downturn.
Yeah.
I think the Dodgers have a lot of problems. That's not a great bullpen. They have the closer in Jansen, but they have a lot of extra-type guys, some extra pieces they've added for this year.
Guys aren't getting any younger.
And they're older. Yeah. The chemistry's not great. They don't play super hard. I don't know what's going to happen with Puig. Guys are getting older. They have Seager. Peterson's got some problems.
The Giants are injury
riddled. I don't know who's going to pitch for the Giants.
Well,
they have Madbum and they have Heston.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who else is in there that's going to start for them.
Did Peavy sign a 2-year deal?
I think he did. I got to look at that.
Hudson's gone, although he could probably be in the rotation next year. I mean, he's shown some signs, but, you know, he's announced his retirement.
I think they have to. The Giants have to go out and get a big-time $100-200 million
and
pitcher.
And I think they've got the money. Right. I think they'll do that.
I think they really have to.
Yeah. But I like the upside of the Diamondbacks and the youthfulness. We heard it in L.A. I mean, from the broadcasters, talking to other people, they love the Diamondbacks' offense and the defense. And their comment is the same thing we talk about, and everybody knows. If you guys can get any kind of pitching, you guys are going to be really tough next year and beyond.
Well, part of this year has been to rebuild the pitching staff. Mm-hmm. That was one of the mandates going into last offseason. And they've done a tremendous job of filling the organization at the major and minor league levels with different young pitchers. But part of that is what we've seen this year. Well, we have to develop young pitchers. Well, this is the development.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be sunshine and roses here. That's you're building young pitchers, a young staff. So I think all the things we've just talked about and the overuse that the bullpen has had to go through to pick up some of the innings, that's all part and parcel with what you're doing here, which is to develop a young pitching staff. And you've got, look at Ruby. Ruby's going to be 27. This is his first year where he's going to be, he'll probably finish at 190 innings or so. Just
he's
a smidge under 200. Right. He's a great example. Now you've got a guy who's ready to go into next
right.
year as a legitimate prime of his career, 30-start, 200-inning power pitcher. And you're going to have other guys like that as well. So I look at the struggles, the occasional struggles of the rotation this year and say, this is what it is. This is how it's done. This is part of the equation.
I think the biggest thing is if they can go out, we keep talking about a one and maybe a three, but I think if they could go out and get a certified number one or 1A, with Corbin being one or 1A, and the pitcher that they bring in, either as a free agent or through a trade being the other one or 1A, you could go then one or two with the new guy and Corbin. You can slot Ruby into the three slot. You could slot Ray into the four slot and then have Godley, Hellickson,
Blair.
Aaron Blair
yeah, he'll be
battle it out,
I
mean, among others, mm-hmm. for that number five start and kind of go from there. But I think just valuable the amount of time, innings, and starts that Robbie Ray and Ruby get. You know, we sometimes look at the numbers with Ruby, and he gets the second most run support in baseball. Okay, that's one thing. It's another thing still to win 13 ball games. So that means he's sticking around and keeping his ball club in the game. His numbers aren't the gaudiest because of the ERA's high, 4.60.
He gives up a lot of home runs.
Mm-hmm. I think, to be honest with you, I think his command has been better than I thought it would be. He's only walked 56. Now, there have been some ball games where he's been behind, gotten behind on the count, hasn't walked a guy, but it's led to maybe a big inning. But I think the fewer amount of walks, the 56, surprised me a little bit. I thought he was a guy who might walk 75, 80, maybe even upwards of that in here.
He's had a few starts recently where he's walked four in a game. I want to say it's happened three times
in the last
seven.
And that brought that number up a little bit.
Yeah, so the number's going to come up a little bit. But part of that is fatigue, too.
Yes.
It's the end of a long year. But you know what Jeremy Hellickson's going to be if he's back next year? He's got one more year of arbitration. Then you look at how much has been gained in terms of the development with Ruby and Robbie Ray.
Big time.
And you're going to be so far ahead of where you were at that point last
year. These guys
know
162-game schedule now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they've been up here.
And so
here are the guys who have started games this year, and I'll go alphabetically. Chase Anderson with I didn't throw Chase into that spot either.
Boy, was he good the other day.
That was
Holy
as good
cow,
as,
was
I mean,
he
that,
good.
Yeah, the changeup and the curveball. Oh. 26 starts for Chase Anderson, 8 for Archie Bradley. 4 for Chas. There's another name, Chasen, even Bradley.
Archie,
you can throw into the mix.
Archie's getting more innings in the instructional league.
Coleman got 12 starts, but Josh, where he's at right now is where I think Josh Coleman belongs.
I agree.
15 for Corbin, 30 for De La Rosa, 1 for Delgado, 5 for Godley, 25 for Hellickson. Huddy got that one quick start. 21 for Robbie Ray, and 5 for Alan Webster. 153 starts. So you got a lot of guys there, but you know, we didn't even mention Bradley. Like I said, we didn't mention Chasen or Chase Anderson. You throw those guys into the mix too. And if Chase pitches like he pitched the other day, I mean, he's definitely in the mix.
That curveball and that changeup were just phenomenal.
And he needed that, and the Diamondbacks needed that, but I think that was really good for him.
Big time. Mm-hmm. And you know what? What was funny was he didn't make a start for 2 weeks. He was clearly fatigued. The stuff wasn't sharp. They were working on some different things in the bullpen.
Fastball had to zip.
Trying to get him to throw a slider. Mm-hmm. So as Mike Harkey said, he's got a pitch that moves in a different way from the two-seamer, which will go down and away from the lefty. The slider will come at the lefty. But, you know, when he threw the first pitch of the ball game and Chase Utley hit it for a home run, he must have had a moment where he thought, oh, here we go again. Because he'd only lasted two innings in his previous start 2 weeks before.
Right.
But, boy, as soon as that home run, he didn't give
that
up another hit.
Yeah, that was it.
And that, I thought, was the most impressive thing to me. The way he maintained his composure, found it, and just got better and better as the game went on.
That one stretch, he had struck out two through two innings. Struck out Utley, Seager, and Gonzalez in the third inning. Struck out Ethier and Grandaldo up in the fourth inning. And then a ground ball out by Van Slyke. And then struck out Peterson. So he had a stretch where he struck out six or seven batters in the third, fourth, and fifth innings. He ended up with 10 of the ball game, a career high for him.
Yep. The funny thing is, and this is, you can guarantee this, in the end, when we're sitting here at this time next year, mm-hmm. all the guys we've mentioned here will have pitched. Because as it always happens, you're going to need all of them.
Yep.
It's not just five.
Yeah.
So, and that's important to keep in mind, too. One dynamic that I think has changed, we're going to get to Patrick Corbin, speaking of pitching, in just a moment. But I think it's important to bring up, after the series we just saw in L.A., how much Brandon Drury mm-hmm. has changed the dynamic in that infield heading into the offseason.
There's no doubt about it.
That kid is a big-time player.
He's legitimate. And I mean, he's got such a nice stroke of the ball, just jumps off his bat. He hit five home runs in the minors this year. He's already hit two, and he hit one off Kershaw. And Kershaw's reaction when he hit it was, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it zipped out of here.
Kershaw hung a nothing ball, right? Yeah. And he, but he did miss
but
it.
But he held
he
back
ma-
on
he
it.
He made the
yeah,
adjustment,
he,
and it was a great piece of big league
it.
Hitting.
Yeah.
And he had some really, really impressive at-bats, especially, and we talked about this on TV after the Thursday game, his at-bat against Kenley Jansen in the ninth inning. I think it was a 10-pitch at-bat.
It was.
And it ended up nowhere, but boy, you watched him grow and mature in the course of one at-bat. He was a doubles line drive hitting machine in the minor leagues.
I think and he'll be that in the major leagues, too.
I think it's going to translate into more homers. I think it's going to translate into more homers.
He might be a 40-20 guy, or even more than that in home runs.
Look, it was one series.
He's Goldie Jr.
Yeah. I said on TV, I watch Brandon Drury, and I know he was a switch hitter, so it's not a great comp, but I see a little Chipper Jones myself.
Yeah, well, you know, that was the guy he idolized, coming up, especially in that Atlanta organization. But, you know, we called him Goldie Jr. on the air yesterday because I'm sure the Dodgers are thinking the same thing after he hit those two home runs against
them. But you know what? He carries himself in the same manner that Goldie does, and we've said this a number of times. He's very serious about his profession. Brandon Drury is a baseball guy, and that's just about all that he's interested in right now as a 23-year-old kid. Yep. He is all about baseball.
And as we tape this tonight, Steve, he's at shortstop tonight, so there's the versatility, but he's going to be a third baseman.
He played a little shortstop at Reno this year. They've mixed him up. They've done a really good job, if you go through his minor league game logs, of playing him half at second, half at third.
I think that's great.
Yeah, to get an idea of where he best fits, because you're looking forward here, because you've got, you know, Owings and Ahmed and Dansby Swanson coming. You've got guys like Leyba and Reinheimer in the system, too. So there are a lot of middle infield options. But Deshaun Watson told us on our previous episode that Brandon Drury could be a good to average major league second baseman, or average to good, I should say. But Deshaun said his skills at third base are elite. Yeah. That was his word. And I think that speaks volumes about where the infield is headed. Because as Tony La Russa has said, the outfield is set. It's a matter of finding the best three infielders to go with Goldie moving forward. And I find it almost impossible to believe that one of those three is not Brandon Drury.
Well, you got an outfield that hits 300, each one of them. The power with two of those guys, and Peralta and Pollock, they're both going to come close to 20 home runs. Then you got Ender, who can bunt, slap, get on base, 150-some hits, going to get better and better.
And the second-best defensive outfielder in baseball, according to the metrics.
And runs saved. And, you know, you look at the defense on all those guys, and then you add Drury to the mix along with Goldie and whomever you want to play at second base and shortstop, and you got some good options there. Along with Castillo coming back, maybe Saltalamacchia, Tuffy. You have to figure out a fourth outfielder. You got to figure out the backup infielders. But it's all there. It's all there for the taking. That's why it's so exciting, thinking about 2016.
And there will be games next year, Gub, where we're watching this team and we will think, I guarantee you, how do they put together a lineup that hits the ball this well, top to bottom, a bunch of hitters, yet they're all still really, really good defensively?
Yeah.
You know, that mix of superior offense and quality defense, that's not something that a lot of teams have.
That play that Ahmed made where he got hurt, the back, that's one of the best players you're going to see.
Unbelievable.
The way he threw that ball to number one scramble, get to the ball, because I thought it was through on the hole.
Yeah, I did too.
And then he knocked it down, and he picked it up, and the angle that he threw with what he got on it, and Owings just had to stretch out and made the catch over there. That was a game saver.
It was a perfect throw. Yep. It was a perfect throw. Speaking of perfect throws, or pitches in this case, and the pitching staff for 2016, we are joined here in the radio booth by our first guest today, Patrick Corbin, who looks ahead to 2016. Here he is.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Joined inside the radio booth here at Petco Park by Diamondbacks lefty Patrick Corbin. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
One day after your matchup with Kershaw at Dodger Stadium, what's that like to go into that ballpark knowing it's you? It's not really you versus him, but in a way it is. What's that like knowing on the way to the park, okay, I'm up against Kershaw here today?
Yeah, no, last time I faced them, they had Greinke as well, so facing both of them. We know it's just going to be a low-scoring game. It's going to be tough to get runs, and our offense did a great job and got his pitch count up and put up three runs there. And it was just unfortunate there in the fifth inning, wasn't able to get out of it, and then we gave up the lead there. But we know it's going to be tough versus them, and it's always nice to beat them, but we came out on the wrong side yesterday.
Bob on the TV side had one of his keys to the game was get used to it, meaning you, as one of the top of the rotation guys next year, are going to be facing a Greinke or a Kershaw or whoever it seems like almost every time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no. My game plan's not going to change versus anybody, but we know it's going to be a tough battle for our hitters up there, and you just have to be on your game that much more, and it's something that I look forward to, and I guess if there's anybody, I hope it's me to go out there and face those guys. And yesterday just didn't come out our way, and I know next year we'll get another chance at that.
Just curious, do you have a new appreciation for baseball after missing a year plus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was – I mean, that's the hardest thing, just being away from the game and going out there competing. And it's kind of sad it's come to the end where I have one more start or so. So it's – I'm starting to feel good, my body's starting to get in better shape, and everything feels pretty much close to normal, and now the season's coming to an end. So I'm just grateful to be back, be healthy, and really looking forward for next season, coming in healthy and pitching a full season.
I think that's the key, too. You can go into the off season now. You don't have to rehab. You can just get yourself ready for spring training and go from there. So the thought process is a lot different for you.
Yeah. Everything will be normal. I'll start throwing around Christmas time again and be able to do all my workouts and everything like that, and able to go home and relax for a little bit after the year and not stay out here. So that's always good. And
Even in that weather?
Yeah. So, yeah.
He's got to go watch his Orange men play basketball.
True.
But, yeah, I'm just looking forward to having everything normal again. Yeah. For the last 16 months before I came back, nothing was really normal. And now everything's starting to feel great again. And elbow feels fine. It was just getting the rest of the body there. I'm used to it again, and I think I'm there.
It looks like you are. It looks like you believe that you are when we watch you up here. The results certainly speak to that down on the field. Was there a moment on any mound here over the last few weeks where you said, I'm back, or you felt like, okay, I'm back to where I was before?
Yeah, it probably took, I'd say, probably 5 or 6 starts where the recovery, it wasn't normal yet, and it just took a little bit longer, and wasn't feeling as good going into each start, and I think my body just gradually got used to it, and I think it's really important just to get as many starts I could in this year, so next year it's a lot easier to transition back into it. And building up those innings and being off for so long, my body just wasn't used to it. So if I feel like now I'm catching up to it, and in these 4 days in between, my elbow and shoulders, feeling good again.
Is there a point where the arm has progressed to a certain level, the body has progressed to a certain level, but they're on different levels? And it's the idea that you got to get them all to work on the same timeline?
I just think it's the reps that I've been getting out there, and just being away from the game for that long and not doing it, you don't realize like how your body has to transform and get back into shape that it was a couple years ago for me. And for Daniel Hudson to go through it 2 years in a row, I mean, I can't imagine that. And now I feel like I'm pretty much where I was, and I'm really excited about that, and just really pumped for next season.
You know, you look at this offense, the Diamondbacks employed, I think it's probably going to be similar to the same guys next year, and as they develop year to year, it's only going to get better and better. That has to be exciting to a starting pitcher. It didn't work out yesterday in the ball game in L.A., but this ball club can flat out hit, and that takes a little of that pressure off you having to be perfect every time out, because you know they're going to score runs.
Yeah, no, definitely. Offense has been great defensively. We've been, I think, one of the top teams in baseball. And next year I'll be able to get up there around 100 pitches, get my pitch count up there, and some of these other guys as well. We have a really young staff here, so We'll see what happens next year, but offensively we'll be able to compete with anybody, and I'm excited to go out there and be able to be myself and pitch deeper into ball games.
You mentioned the 100 pitch. Has there been a time or two here since you've come back, especially the last few starts, where you've wanted to go longer, but they've reeled you in a little bit and said, no, let's keep it at what we said, 90, 95?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's early on it was kind of tough knowing my pitch count was low and trying to go out there and still pitch deep into ball games. And San Fran, I felt really good and wanted to go out for the eighth, but I understand everything. And even those games where things aren't going so well and your pitch count gets up a little bit early, like yesterday, I still wanted to try to get out of that inning there and try to keep us the lead. And it's tough coming out there and you're frustrated, but just looking back on it, it's all going for the next step, for next season. And as long as I stay healthy, I think that's one of the biggest things right now.
There have been moments, Pat, where we see you throw one of those sliders to the righty, and it's almost like a flashback. It's like, wow, that was Patrick Corbin from 2 years ago. Do you have those moments as well where you see the pitch and think, wow, that's it right there?
Yeah, it's I think my command almost feels a little bit better. It's something I've just been focused on, playing catch every day and just trying to not really change my mechanics, but maybe be more consistent with them and feel like I've been able to stay around the plate more, just be more consistent with my fastball. And in the slider, it seems like that's been my pitch before the injury, and I feel like I got it back now. So the changeup is coming along really well too, which is which I've really liked. Just another pitch there to throw to righties, keep them off balance. And I feel really close to everything's getting there, and now the season's coming to an end.
It's funny, I've seen that you mentioned that after a couple of recent starts about the changeup, and how pleased you are with the progress with that pitch.
Yeah, no, it's just another weapon for me to have out there. And against the Giants, it worked really well against Posey and some hitters like that that are really patient. They follow off pitches and they know what they're going to do. And recently, last couple of games, teams have been cheating inside a little bit off me. So just another weapon to have there.
Hmm. You know, we'll get back to the slider. And I know you've heard the quote from Todd Helton after you pitched against the Rockies. He said it was the best slider I've ever seen. They said, well, you mean this season? He said, no, the best slider I've ever faced as a Major League Baseball player. That in itself tells you how good that pitch is. How did you learn? Was it something that came along early in your pitching career, or did you develop it? Did somebody teach it to you to throw it the proper way, or what?
Actually, my father showed me this grip when I was really young, starting to play catch, and it just kind of stuck with me, and I never really changed it. And throughout the minors a little bit, I had some ups and downs with it, and some coaches were trying to change it, but I always kind of stuck with it.
Good thing.
And it's just, my dad just grabbed the baseball. He pitched when he was younger, so it was just something that I've stuck with, and hearing that from Todd Helton and some other guys and just having some success with it at this level, it's been encouraging and something that I've been able just to be consistent with, repeating the delivery and being able to throw it for a strike and throw it where I want to. And but it all plays off my fastball.
You talked about going back home, and obviously Syracuse area is home for you. How difficult was it, the weather, especially when you're trying to get to baseball season back there in New York? And Bert, you're familiar with the Boston area. It's not that easy to get a lot of ball games in. How difficult was that to play the game that you – I also like basketball, but how difficult was it to get into a baseball mode when a lot of times you didn't have the opportunity to do that because of the weather?
Yeah, the 2 years I played high school baseball, I started 6 games and 8 games. So
how about that, huh?
Not too many games
I don't think people
played.
Realize that. I mean, a lot of times you get rained out or snowed out, and you don't get the reps that they do in Florida or the Southwest or California or things like that.
Yeah, they try to hold you up for the matchup or a better team, and I think that's why, I mean, a lot of arms from that area, usually they stay healthy, but, I mean, mine was an unfortunate case. But it just allowed me to play other sports, and I just think that's been huge in getting where I am today. And I'm even in college my first year, I didn't think I had a further career in baseball. I just enjoyed playing that and basketball. And it wasn't until that summer where I thought I had something maybe here in baseball and continued with it. But, yeah, we don't get as many looks, too, as some guys who are farther south or out west here, but there's a lot of talent up there.
It's interesting because you did, and you and I have talked about this before, you had that moment where the baseball was something you did and it was fun and you were good at it, But then there was a moment where you realized, hey, this might be something. I should go to Florida where maybe I can get seen more. And that really changed things for you, didn't it?
Yeah, no, that was probably one of the best decisions. And I think my coach there at Mohawk Valley, he talked to the coach there, Jeff Johnson at Chipola, and kind of we got things rolling there and got things happening through my travel team that I was on in Syracuse. And that had to be the best step for me, just to get out there, be seen, and play against better talent.
Do you want to just be Patrick Corbin, the pitcher, and not Patrick Corbin, the Tommy John patient? Does that ever get tired?
Yeah, I mean, I understand all the questions within coming back from the injury, and but I don't really think about it too much. It feels really good, and it's just been encouraging through, I mean, all these guys who have gone through it in Major League Baseball, and they've come back and thrown really well. So it's something that I don't really think about. If there's questions about it, I'll answer. Sure. But everything feels great right now, and just glad to be back.
I'm looking at the schedule. You pitched yesterday. 4 days rest would be Tuesday against Colorado. And then 4 days rest, you'd pitch your last game of the season. Have they told you anything yet? Is that the way it's going to go? There's a day off in there. Mm-hmm. They have to consider if you got one more or two more. Have they said anything?
No, I just talked to Hark a little while ago, just trying to figure out. And yeah. I think we're still trying to see. But
it'd be nice
to get two more in there. And I've told them I would like to get as many as I can, and I just think it will help for next year.
Well, one of the things Chip has said, too, you know, that series with Houston is going to mean so much. So there's a good chance you could pitch against them on the last day. That'd be fun.
No, that'd be nice to maybe spoil their playoff dreams.
That's going
to
be a playoff-like atmosphere that last weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, thanks for doing this. We appreciate it, especially the day after you pitched.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Pat.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
Time to go around the league, and as we head into the final week of the 2015 regular season, Gub, the playoff picture is tightening up, certainly in the American League. The Cubs and Pirates are battling out as we speak. In fact, Pittsburgh just won at Wrigley Field. So it looks like the Pirates are pretty much almost a lock to host that wild card game. The wild card in the American League, and the only reason we really harp on this is because the Diamondbacks are indirectly involved. You've got the Yankees 4.5 up on the Astros to host the wild card game. Houston, as of Friday afternoon, a game and a half ahead of the Angels and the Twins for that last American League wildcard spot. And as we said before, those final three games of the year at Chase Field against the Astros, those are going to be do-or-die must-have games for Houston.
There's no doubt about it. And Chip Hill has already said, you know, hey, we know what's at stake there. We're going to play our big guns. So unless something really turns around and somebody goes on a 6- or 7-game losing streak to get the Astros in there, those final three ball games are going to be huge, and that'll be a lot of fun. I hope the fans get their tickets. Come on out.
Yeah, we urge you, dbacks.com/tickets. It's the closest thing we're going to have in 2015 to the playoffs, certainly a home playoff series. It's going to have that type of atmosphere.
Right.
Because the games are going to be so critical for the Astros. So dbacks.com/tickets. It'll be a great way to send out the 2015 baseball audience and fans with an important series.
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, the Dodgers are pretty much ready to clinch the National League West, as a lot of people had predicted. So some work to be done by the rest of the teams in the division. But, you know, hey, it's been a fun year for the D-backs.
It's been really fun. They've been very entertaining to watch. They've played really, really hard. I think the coaching staff has done a remarkable job. And I you mentioned it earlier. They really are the envy of a lot of other teams, broadcasters, scouts, who constantly come up to us and say, I love watching your team play. We're not just saying that.
We're not making that up. Yeah, we got it in Los Angeles. But, you know, when you watch them, they are a fun ball club to watch, and that's what the other broadcasters, members of the print media see, and they relate to us.
Yeah, so it's definitely a team on the upswing. And as we get set to look ahead to 2016, we discovered that it's going to be the final year broadcasting Dodger games for Vin Scully. And we're about to play an interview we taped a couple of days ago that hopefully Leo has saved. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
It's there.
It was tremendous. This is a great interview. You're going to love it, and we certainly appreciate his time. He was tremendous.
He's as nice off the microphone and away from your listening pleasure, viewing pleasure, as he is when you are listening or watching him on television.
Without further ado, here is Hall of Famer Vin Scully. It's our great pleasure to be joined here on D-backs Podcast in the Vin Scully press box here at Dodger Stadium in L.A. with the great Vin Scully. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, bless your heart. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. As we look down on the field here, it's another crystal clear sky in L.A. It's the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, and I think about how this franchise, L.A., has evolved since the McCourt days, which were dark days, to a new ownership group and a new front office and some new players, Corey Seager and Jock Peterson. How do you think the Dodgers have evolved here over the last few years to where they are right now?
Well, they've done a couple of smart things. They picked up a players that they've needed. Kershaw and Greinke, of course, have carried the team. The bullpen is still weak. I mean, there's no secret about that. Their big problem is trying to get the ball to Kenley Jansen, and it's really been very difficult. The infield, they were very fortunate. Maybe they were very brainy. They picked up Justin Turner, who was basically a utility player with the New York Mets, and he blossomed into not only a regular player, but one upon whom they really depend. Mm-hmm. And then they selected Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley, and although their best years are long behind them, they still fill in whenever required. So they've gotten by. It's not been the year, I think, that they expected. They are in first place. The Western Division is not exactly the toughest division in the National League, but they are where they are, but they're very questionable come the postseason, if indeed there is one.
How about the franchise, Vin, with the ownership group? People always assume this is a giant bank vault printing blue money and the Dodgers can do whatever they want. It hasn't quite worked out that way, has it?
No. In fact, I think a lot of people in town thought, well, they have so much money, they'll go out and get Cole Hamels, and they'll also go out and get this fella and that fella, and they didn't do it. They're very much, I think, after all, they're paying Clayton Kershaw something like $240 million for the next couple of years. They know that Zach Greinke would probably want the same amount of money. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted the same. So I think in some ways they've tried to actually cut back, even though they had that lucrative deal with television that brought them over $8 billion. I do think they're a wise group of businessmen, and they really don't want to just keep on spending. And so that's why they've come up short when they went to get the additional pitching, and they wound up with Matt Latos. It looked like a good deal, but it didn't work out at all.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, Vin, the Dodgers, a franchise started in New York, made the move out here in the late 50s to Los Angeles. The Diamondback franchise, this is their 18th year. They're a young kid
sure.
on the block. But the altercation that took place a couple of years ago, you have a natural rivalry in the Giants because you both came out here together. Is there more of a little feeling now of the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, a little bit better rivalry and a little more
rivalry?
You know,
in all honesty, Greg, I'm not aware of it at all,
yeah.
especially here.
Yeah.
Pretty laid back over here. After all, some kids jumped into a pool. It was your pool.
Yes.
So certainly there's some feelings about I wish they hadn't done that. But to me, it was much ado about nothing. You know? In fact, I never saw it. When they clinched, I went down in the tunnel where the team bus was, and I just felt like I wanted to be alone. And I sat quietly in the bus thinking back over some championship teams and some heartbreak years and all of that stuff. And meanwhile, fellas were taking swimming lessons in your pool. Now, I can understand if the people in Arizona
sure.
are still a little sensitive, but over here, no. Because,
yeah.
first of all, over here, like Phoenix, everybody has a pool.
Yes.
So it's no big deal.
The brawl, Vin, that was here June 2 years ago, the Diamondbacks and Dodgers were pretty neck and neck for a
mm-hmm.
while there. That fight right here in this ballpark seemed to really tip the scales in L.A.'s favor. Have you found that to be the case? Did things change on that day?
Yeah, it pumped them up for sure. I can remember poor Miguel Montero draped over that railing and everybody trying to take a shot at him. But, I'm sure. But only for the moment. I don't sense, you know, in this day and age, let me put it this way. When we were in Ebbets Field, the dressing rooms were alongside one another, and there was a door that opened, and you could walk from the home team to the visiting team through the doorway. And the Giants and Dodgers got so bitter. I really worried about injuries every game they played. They nailed up that door to make sure it couldn't be opened. That was a bitter rivalry. And, of course, in New York, The fans are shoulder to shoulder, slotting mail in the post office. Giant fans, mm-hmm. Dodger. So the friction was always there. I don't sense the friction, even with the Giants. It was a great rivalry, but it's not the same. When they go up to San Francisco, the crowd has some fun, but there's no sense of meanness. There's no bitterness. Yeah. There was a little in Candlestick Park, I think, yes. because the people perhaps drank a little bit. But I think the money is so big that these fellas are smart enough to know, why do I want to go get into a fight and jeopardize all the money in the world that they're getting? So I don't sense any rivalry at all right now. I could be wrong because I don't go down there. I don't hang out with the players in any way, shape, or form. But I just don't sense it at all.
I wanted to talk to you just briefly about something that had happened in 1981, Fernando Mania. I've talked to a lot of people who said they've never seen anything like that. Was that one of the bright moments in Dodger history for you watching that?
You know, it really was almost a religious thing. It was almost like people going to Lourdes to be cured. I would see, obviously, very low-income Hispanic families with little children. And you had the feeling they were coming here, and they were saying to those children, you see that man out there? He comes from a dirt floor. He comes from, as a great English writer wrote, the back of beyond. And, there's nothing quite like that. The Nomo feeling was an allegiance to the country. It was very good. And Chan Ho Park. But there was nothing like Fernando. No, it was a really rare and special time, especially here in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Wow.
When you said you wanted to be alone after they clinched 2 years ago,
yeah,
and you were on the bus and thinking about teams and players, what were you thinking, some of your favorites?
Oh, I just started to think back. I mean, I saw the fellas jumping around, and then I left them. But I thought back to, like, 1950, I remember. It went down to the last game, and they lost on the last game. And I remember thinking, Carl Furillo, who was a wonderful guy, came up with the winning run at third and one out. So fly ball and they're going to win the game. And he fouled out. And then with two out, Gil Hodges hit a long fly ball. The game went extra innings and they lost the game. And I remember coming down to the dressing room and there was a station wagon piled high with clothing right outside the clubhouse. So I knew it was a player's wagon. And I said to the attendant, Jimmy, whose wagon is that? And he said, that's Ferrillo's. I said, wow. So I went in and I said to Carl, whom I liked very much, tough game. And he looked at me and he said, you do or you don't. And I never forgot that. That was about as professional an attitude as I've ever heard. You do or you don't. I thought he'd be sitting in the corner crying his eyes out or something, but no. And then I thought of some of the thrilling moments. When they won the only World's Championship in Brooklyn, I thought back to those days when it looked like VE Day and VJ Day in Brooklyn all rolled into one. And I thought of the sweep of the Yankees here and all the various things, just reminiscing to myself about, let's see how far this club goes. And it didn't go very far,
I'm going to get a little gushy on you, but as a kid growing up, I grew up with radio, listening to baseball, and I grew up a Cardinals fan, so early on I had Harry Carey. But Jack Buck is the guy that I grew up idolizing. I wanted to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster, so I grew up Cardinal fan, big Jack Buck fan, but in 1979, my wife and I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and they were carrying Dodger baseball. And I had an opportunity to hear Vin Scully on a regular basis. And
I'm sorry.
To this day, I mean, for 18 years, I've been able to share a broadcast corridor with you, and it's just been a remarkable feeling on my part.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. I appreciate your kind thoughts, Greg. I was influenced because we didn't have baseball. In other words, you're talking about yesterday.
Yes.
I'm talking about a century ago. When I grew up, the only thing we had was college football on a Saturday afternoon on the radio.
Yeah.
And I used to crawl underneath this big four-legged monster of a radio we had. And I would have a pillow and some saltine crackers. And I'd put a pillow underneath, and I was directly under the speaker. So when the crowd would roar, and it had nothing to do with me, I'm 8, 9 years old, and Tennessee is playing Alabama, and I'm in Washington Heights in New York, but the crowd roar got me. And after a while, I wanted to be any one of a lot of announcers, like the great Ted Husing or Red Barber or Harry Wismer, Bill Stern. I mean, they were all every Saturday. And so, yeah, I guess that happens, and I'm sure there are youngsters today listening to you, listening to me, and they're doing the same thing. I hope someday that, and hopefully they will.
It's a great job.
Yeah. How do you think that your style has evolved back from the days at Ebbets Field to today?
I never really thought I had a style. When I started, I had Red Barber on one side of me and Connie Desmond on the other. Red, of course, was nationally known, but he was Southern, so he had a tinge of the South in his voice. Connie was Midwestern and a terrific announcer. And Red told me one time, and I was 22 or something, and Red said, you know, you bring something into the booth that no one else in the world can bring. And I was shocked, and I said, what? And he said, yourself. There is no one in this world exactly like you. So he said, I don't want you listening to other broadcasts. I don't, because in New York we had Mel Allen, Russ Hodges, I mean, Kurt Gowdy, great announcers. And he said, I don't want you to listen to any of them, because in some ways I guess he thought I'd water my wine. It wouldn't be me. It would be a little bit of this man, a little bit of that man. And it was a good caution for a young announcer who's thinking, well, if that's a good expression for him, I'll use it. And you lose yourself. Yeah. So whatever style or no style I have was a product of not listening to anyone else on purpose. Admittedly, I could have learned a heck of a lot more in a hurry. But because of that advice, whatever comes out is me. I just don't listen to other games. I'm sure I would have learned more.
But it's really good.
I took Red's advice, you know.
It really worked out pretty well.
Really
well,
good.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really good.
I'm so fortunate. I mean, I think about tonight coming to the ballpark, and I thought, 66 years I've been doing this. Someday I'm going to understand the infield fly rule, you know. But, yeah, so one to go, God willing. And 67, that'll be enough.
Well, you know, we've all got prep work to do. We appreciate your time. The one thing I wanted to ask you, though, before you left, pencil or pen scorekeeping?
You know what? When I began, it was a pencil with a little rubber eraser on it.
I still use it.
I must admit that after all these years now, I'm pen with whiteout handy.
There you go.
You have to be confident, I have discovered, to go with the pen.
Well, it's like somebody who does the crossword puzzles in pen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really being confident.
Yeah, people listening are probably saying, what are they talking about? But, you know, Candiotti for years, my partner, used pen, and now he's gone to pencil.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's gone backwards.
So, yeah.
Well, the print's a little larger for me now, too, than it used to be. But otherwise, I guess in many ways, it's the same operation, getting ready for basically the same game, and up something pops that you've never seen before, and that's the charm of it.
Do you have all your scorebooks from all the years?
No. Yeah. I'm not a collector at all. No. It's probably careless or whatever, but I just, that was yesterday.
Yeah.
I've never been one to look back. I don't even concentrate that much on the present. I'm always inclined to wonder about tomorrow, you know, until you run out of them. That'll be that.
Was there something that made you decide one more would be enough, and then that would be it, as he just said?
You know, really, the biggest problem for me is saying goodbye. Not goodbye to the listeners, whom I don't know, and not to the players, whom I really don't know anymore. When I started, I was young or younger than most of the players. I'd sit in the back of the bus with Dick Williams making jokes, and he became a Hall of Fame manager and all that stuff. Today, the players all say Mr. Scully. They will not call me by my first name. So that tells me that I'm not with them anymore, and I understand that. I mean, they can say, well, no, it's out of respect. And I say, great, but it's no longer work when you have that. So I thought about hanging it up seriously this year. But I looked around at the guys I work with you fellas visiting. You don't think I look forward to that?
With all the broadcasters
coming in. And then the press box guys and Marie on the elevator. And so to say goodbye to them, I will do it next year. I mean, God willing, there is a next year. I will. But Yeah, that was the big decision. Could I say goodbye? And I think it's time for me to say goodbye to you right now.
All right. Sure is. We'll let you get back to work. You've been very gracious.
Thank you, fellas. Bless your heart to both of you. Good luck, D-backs.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Well, now we're back here in San Diego, Gub, and our thanks again to the great Vin Scully, the Hall of Famer. That was a real thrill and
really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed hearing and, you know, find out some new things from Vin, including he does use pen instead of pencil.
That was big for you.
It was. I still use pencil, but I did find out from Boyd, who sits right next to him, has been for years, his right-hand man, that I got the pen that Vin uses, and I tried. It's a ballpoint pen. A lot of pens smear. This one doesn't.
I took a
photo of it so I wouldn't forget what it was.
Let me see.
It's
you took a picture of the
yes,
pen.
Yes, I did. Right there. It's a Uniball.
The Vin Scully model.
Yeah. I use those. Holy cow.
Yeah, but it doesn't smear, so that's good.
Yeah, I remember the first time I showed up spring training 3 years ago, I took out a pen, you looked at me, and you said, what are you doing?
The crazy thing is, Candy used pen for all those years, Leo, and now he's gone to pencil.
And he still can't get it right.
But I think that happened because he spilled his pen ink all over.
Yeah. He did. He had blue and red ink all over his hand and on his pocket.
Well, we will, Leo, now we're working on a big season ender, right? That's in the works.
Big one.
You know, I didn't think that we could top this one. We may.
Yeah, we will tentatively now have episode 25, which will mark a quarter century of D-backs podcasts. Wait, what?
That's pretty good, 25.
Yeah, 25. We are anticipating we will have most, if not all, of the front office on one show. Tony, Stu, DeJean, some form of that. Possibly Chip Hale as well, separate or together. We're working on that right now. We're trying to piece the fabric of that.
Maybe a three-hour show.
It might be. We'll be back in our off-season form where the shows are 2 hours long, God forbid. But that is, we anticipate coming up the first week once the season ends. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's what, yeah.
Early October would be about the 5th, maybe tape the 5th, and sometime later that week, I would guess.
And the content in that show is going to be tremendous because you're going to have basically the breakdown of the entire season and looking ahead from the front office on the show.
Set the table for the offseason.
Yep. And there will be some work to be done in the offseason, but you know, I don't think they have to do a lot of work. I think they have to kind of touch up here and there. The pitching will be the biggest thing and go from there.
I still think the bullpen needs
it does.
Help, but
well, it
I
does.
Agree with you. They're real close.
Well, it's pitching.
Things are trending up. If you had little up green arrows or down red arrows next to every team in the division, I think, to be fair, the one team that you could really say would have a green arrow next to it is the Diamondbacks. Yeah. I really think all the other teams would have the red arrow going down, trending down.
Yeah, and we've talked about it already on this podcast. So it's enlightening to see this season and still playing hard right till the very end, this Diamondback ball club, as you know they would. And, you know, look ahead to spring training, February of 2016.
And, again, come on out for that final homestand, three against the Rockies, and the big three over the last weekend against Houston.
And don't forget to go out and watch the Young Diamondbacks play in the Arizona Fall League.
I will be there at Salt River.
Say hello to Bert, because he will be there.
I will be there. Two teams playing at Salt River, by the way, Leo.
Yeah.
Two teams. Because
two.
Well, they're doing clubhouse renovations in Surprise.
Right.
So Surprise is going to use Salt River. So you'll have even more baseball close by, which will be great. So that is episode 24. Our thanks to Patrick Corbin and Hall of Famer Vin Scully. You can follow this podcast, D-backs Podcast, on the Twitter for news about upcoming guests, links to shows. D-backs Podcast brought to you by Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints, Martin Paints at Anxious Paints, and Motzes by Streitz. For the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte.
Thank you very much.
That's you. And the Kingslayer, the Mother of Dragons, Leo, Bad News, Gil Martin.
Yep.
I am Steve Berthume. Thanks for listening and downloading this episode 24. We will talk to you again very soon here on D-backs Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.